Well, Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, hasn't it flown by? No, it hasn't. It's been a really long year and yeah. And we've got another one to come.
Oh, my goodness, we have. But don't worry about that. We're meant to be trying to sound positive.
Forget about that.
And that is what we're going to do. We've got a great podcast, actually, over the next little while, looking back at some of our favourite bits of 2021 in this very special edition of Nullpoix.
Nullpoix is shameful.
Nullpoix is lack of respect for jurors.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
Shame that they must be feeling.
Nullpoint is no fun.
Yes, hello, welcome in, guys. If you've just joined us and this is the first episode you've ever listened to of us, well, you're kind of in for a treat. You're going to get a bit of a backstory, really, of what we've been doing the past year with Nullpoix. We are a UK Eurovision fan podcast. I'm Laura, that's Martin. We love Eurovision. We don't know everything about it, but we are trying to learn. And this first episode here, as Martin said, is a little bit special. We've basically looked back through our past year on Nullpoix and we've taken some of the best bits, some of the big interviews that we did on Nullpoix, because we have spoken to some really great people. And we basically just cut them down into the best bits. So you'll get all of the goodness of Nullpoix without the rubbish bits. Trivia time.
Yeah. Excuse me. I like trivia time. This is going to be over two podcasts. And in this podcast, you'll meet somebody who some people might describe as someone who is eccentric. I would describe as somebody who is passionate and who enjoys Eurovision so much that they devote a lot of their free time to doing something quite remarkable. We'll find out more about that. You'll hear our chat with Steve Rosenberg, who's the BBC's correspondent in Moscow, talks a lot about Russia, but also he's a great pianist and he plays all the Eurovision songs. So me and him got our pianos out and we had a little duet. That's really good. But first, we want to take you to just before the Eurovision Song Contest back in May in Rotterdam. We were so excited, weren't we? Because we got to speak to a very, very special guest.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it, Martin? It was, of course, Katrina from Katrina and the Waves, the person who'd last won it for the UK in Eurovision. And we caught up with her. It was just a few days before the Eurovision final in Rotterdam, way back in May.
Hi, Laura. Hello, Martin. How are you both?
We're very, very good.
Very well.
We're very well. Thank you so
good.
Much.
Good. I'm so glad to hear it. I'm so glad to hear it. Isn't it an exciting week? It's always great when the Eurovision week finally gets here. And things have been so dreary and so depressing that it's great to sometimes, you know, you can laugh at the Eurovision Song Contest. And if it's not the milkmaidens and the grannies with the babushkas, I mean, I'd say bring on the poodles. Let's go the whole circus hog, you know?
Completely. Going back to that amazing night in 1997, how did it feel, Katrina, winning all those years ago?
Oh, nobody thought we were going to win for 2 seconds. I mean, even though we kind of set the place on fire and it was just a beautiful, beautiful moment. You know, you could almost smell the victory in the air after we had completed our song, Love Shine a Light. But we went back to the dressing room and right away the Debbie Downers came in and they said, don't get excited. You guys can't possibly win because of the political voting. The UK won't win. There's no way you could win. And all this. So what did we do? We did what you do. We opened the champagne.
Yeah, headed
three
straight
bottles
to the bar.
In.
Very good.
Straight. Three bottles in. We realized we'd won and that we had to reprise the song, which was challenging. But it didn't matter. I mean, it's great to win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and what a moment that was, just for the whole country. I think everyone can remember. I'm sorry to make you feel old, Katrina, I hope I don't, but I was 7 years old, and I remember I wasn't allowed to stay up to watch the whole thing, and my mum and dad called me into their bedroom really early the next morning, and we had the radio on, and your song came on, and they turned to me, and they went, we've won. And I just remember this. I just couldn't contain my excitement. I was just so pleased. And so that song, Love Shine a Light, is always just a soundtrack to those really, you know, happy times with my parents in their bedroom.
It
was so lovely.
I love that story so much. That's so cute. I mean, as it happens, my parents were kind of laying in bed watching it on TV as well, just thinking, "What now? What's she up to? Now what's she gone and done?" And so, you know, it's so nice to win something and to spread some joy, you know, and that I think that's really the most gratifying thing about it is you get the song that's got a great, lovely little message and a fantastic chorus and an uplifting beat. And, you know, you're done. You're good. That's all you got to do.
How do you think the acts will be feeling, this year's acts will be feeling right now, just ahead of the final and the real Eurovision taking place?
Well, obviously there's this complication of the pandemic that has already seen problems for Iceland and Poland. And so there's kind of that looming, but if you can sit back and forget about that, then it is the usual, just everybody's a bag of nerves. And, you know, this competition gets more competitive and bigger production. I mean, it's got a real punch to it now. Back when I did it and there were 24 contestants, it kind of seemed we were all friends. We knew all the other acts. We went to each other's little parties that everybody had every night. And I think now, you know, it's big business. Mm. You know, Will Ferrell made a Eurovision movie last year or the year before, and that has now piqued the interest in Americans. So they're watching it online. You know, it's big, it's grown, and it'll keep growing. So you've got to be good. Is your song interesting, energetic, brilliant enough to poke its head above the rest of them and stand out as an out-and-out winner? It's a big ask, a big task.
Do you have a fondest memory of Eurovision, apart from obviously winning? I imagine that's quite high up there, but anything else?
I think it's kind of unreal when the Prime Minister or Prince Charles, as was in our case, contacts you the next day and says, congratulations. That is surreal, because you're laying in bed with that huge hangover I was telling you about, and it's Prince Charles. So that's pretty cool. I mean, okay, was the Queen returning her library books, or where was she that morning?
you wanted the top dog, yeah, didn't you? Absolutely. You
know. What is this? It's only the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah, exactly. This requires the Queen, definitely. Just before you go, Katrina, this year then, who's your money on to win or certainly do very, very well in the competition this year?
Oh, well, you know, Malta's strong, Russia is strong, Ukraine is strong. I'm going to stick Malta out there. Ukraine, very, very close, but Malta's got something. That girl's on fire.
Completely.
Thank you so much, Katrina. Really appreciate you coming on.
Well, thanks for having me, you guys.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
You bet. Take care. Bye now.
Oh, wasn't she great?
It's great.
Wasn't
hearing that
she
again?
Fantastic?
Yeah, she's just so cheery and just like really happy to chat, and great. So some great anecdotes as well.
Really good. Although I have to say, her guessing who won, she didn't even mention Italy. Didn't even come into the. But to be fair, that was the same with us as well.
Yeah, same. Even, yeah, yeah.
This is a very special edition of Nul Poir, looking back at some of our favourite chats with various people over 2021, and we move on now to what I think was one of my very, very favourite conversations, actually. And it was with Steve Rosenberg.
He's the BBC Moscow correspondent. He's based over there, and he does a lot about the politics of Russia and things going on, but he also
there's an amazing interview he did with Alexander Lukashenko not too long ago
from Belarus.
It's just his reporting and just the way he can hold these people to account and is amazing, extremely brave guy. But when he's not doing that very, very, very serious job, he has this love of Eurovision.
Yes, he's also really big into Eurovision. And as you'll hear in the interview, just how much into Eurovision it's come into his life. And he does this thing every year where he plays all the fresh entries on the piano. It's not like he's reading it off some sheet music. He just listens to the songs and then he's able to play it on the piano, which is amazing in itself. So we had to obviously get him to do that when we spoke to him. So we caught up with him by his piano at home in Moscow.
Hello there. Hi. Great talking to you.
You too.
Steve is sitting at his piano. I am sitting at mine. There we go. So we're ready to go. I've just seen, Steve, that you've been putting a great little video on Twitter in the last few moments of you doing a kind of Eurovision and then Kalinka, a Russian folk song mashup. So I thought I'd sort of demonstrate the two bits. So the Eurovision theme obviously goes like this. And then Kalinka is, what is it, something? You've sort of mashed those two together, haven't you?
Well, I tried to, yeah. It sort of came out like this, really. I had to put the Eurovision theme in a minor key. But
okay. It's very good.
You can imagine the balalaikas going, the fur hats, the vodka flowing.
Exactly, yeah. Excellent stuff. Now, as we were saying, we love to chat to Eurovision fans on this podcast, and you are a very big one. How did you become a Eurovision fan there? How did it all start?
You see, Eurovision was one of the few programmes I was allowed to stay up late and watch, and I just loved it. The music, the crackly phone lines for the voting, it was amazing. It was exotic.
What's Russia's attitudes to Eurovision in general? What do they think about Eurovision? I'd be very interested to know your answer about this.
But they take it very seriously. If Russia loses, then it starts to blame the rest of the world. It thinks there's a plot against it, you know? All the insults start flying against the West. There was some plot out against Russia.
Let's talk about this year then, 2021. Which one stands out for you, some of the entries that maybe are your personal favourites for 2021?
I think it's a bumper year for Eurovision. Yep. There are some brilliant songs. I really like the Swedish song.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's have a little listen.
Voices. I really like that, but I also really like Spain.
Beautiful one, that, isn't it? Very good. Very good.
Iceland's got a good song. Switzerland's got a great song.
Yes.
I was going to play you Dorothy's 10 Years because we're part of the virtual choir.
Really?
We submitted our entry into that. So we're in that. And
you won't hear us, Steve, so don't worry. There's about 1,000 people that took part. So, yeah, you won't actually hear us.
Yes, excellent.
That's that one.
Actually, I just remembered a story you were asking about and what Russians think about the Eurovision Song Contest. One of the funniest things that ever happened to me was in the mid-90s when I was having a tour of Russian state television, and I wandered into a studio where they were rehearsing for the Song for Europe contest, so Russia's national final to choose the song to represent them. And I got talking to the director of the programme. So he said, oh, you're a Eurovision fan. Well, why don't you come on the show tonight? So I found myself co-presenting Russia's Song for Europe contest. It was like 1996, I think. At that time, going back to the 90s, Russia really felt it wanted to be part of a common Europe. And I think it saw the Eurovision Song Contest as a way of coming in from the cold after the years of the Cold War and the Soviet Union and communism, and actually being part of not the European Union, but this common Europe. And things have changed so much here. You know, Russia has sort of taken a different path now. It's turned its back on Europe, on the West, and it's going in a different direction. Mm. And I find that very sad. We have a lot of fun with Eurovision. It is, after all, just a song contest. But, you know, there are many people for whom it's more than just a song contest. I remember meeting an incredible pensioner in Tallinn, in Estonia. And, of course, Estonia had been part of the Soviet Union. And this guy, had, in Soviet times, secretly built himself a satellite dish in order that he could watch the Eurovision Song Contest. Because for him, Eurovision was a symbol of freedom. And that really brought home for me that actually Eurovision was more than just a song contest. It was a symbol. It's great that there is this event, I think, that can bring people together, bring countries together. Yes, there's arguing and there's politics comes into it. But at the end of the day, you've got Europe sitting down and taking part in this great, fun, colourful musical extravaganza. And that has to be good, doesn't it? That has to be a good thing.
Let's get back to the piano playing, which I'm keen to hear more of. And I think we should go back in time. You said that you can play over 300 Eurovision songs. So go on then, Steve. We're going to put you on the spot now. Which one?
Play 300.
All 300. Please.
No, go on, yeah.
Which one is your favourite to play of all time?
It's really difficult because it changes. Big Steal or Borrow, I quite like.
Oh, yeah.
Which didn't win the Eurovision Song Contest for Britain. I think it came second in 1972,
How's that one go?
Yes, it was like this. Okay, thank you. I like that.
I reckon we should end this by maybe doing a little duet. I thought we could do the Russian entry if you were up for this.
Let's give it a go. if it works out, maybe Manisha will hire us.
Maybe.
So this is this. So.
So much fun. I just loved that. Absolutely loved that. I've got all my fingers crossed that we can make it happen again in 2022 because I'd love to do that again. It was, I won't forget it. It was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So one more little chat to bring you actually now in our journey through some of our best bits, and then we'll tell you what's going to be coming up in the next episode. So massive guest in the next episode, which we'll get to in just a second. But first, we love meeting people here on Norpois who are passionate about the song contest. And I don't think you'll find many more people as passionate about it as Alexandro Kruger. He is the creator of Lego Eurovision.
Yes, and that's kind of exactly what it sounds like. He basically recreates the entire of the finals and some other of the Eurovision parts as well in Lego. He creates the characters, he creates the whole stage, the whole set in Lego. He sort of films it all happening as it's happened. So just after the contest, he does a film about everything that's happened. You know, there were some very funny bits that he took from the final and recreates it all. And it takes him so long to do all of this, but he's done it every year for quite a few years now. And we caught up with him, really. He told us what creating Lego Eurovision every year means to him.
For most people or Eurovision fans, it's, you know, one time a year they see the adult Eurovision recreated with Legos. And actually behind me, you don't see that at the moment. I have the model that is a huge blue and green screen. For me, it's my, I would say, hobby where I recreate everything from the Eurovision, Junior Eurovision, the Eurovision movie in stop motion Legos. You know, all the fun parts, all the not so fun parts, like 0 points for everyone this year.
Yeah.
And so that's it.
It's so well done and brilliantly created. I mean, it must have taken you forever. How long does it take to put together something like that? Because the attention to detail is just exquisite.
This, for example, this module has been with me for 2 years, and I have been working on details. It's 100% recreation of the stage.
Wow.
I have the original plans, of course, that I receive each year from the stage designers. It's 100% everything, every stair, every light, and I work on every detail until the very end.
Roughly how many Lego bricks then are going into these finished videos?
In this model and in this project, around 500,000.
Whoa! That is just incredible. It's also bonkers, but in the most amazing way. The question has to be, Alexandro, why? Yes. Why do you do this?
Yeah, I ask myself the same question. I don't know. No, but it all started when I had been doing this for 17 years, so since I was about one. I always have had this urge to create, and when I was younger, I wasn't able to, you know, go to Eurovision, work with Eurovision, so I recreated it at my very home. But it's also been, I mean, many people think that this is a fascination about Legos. Sorry to say that it's not. It's just a way of expressing, because it's a very cheap, it's not cheap, I can tell you that, but it's a cheaper version to have the same to work with, because I can't recreate Eurovision with a stage. I don't have that budget yet.
Let's talk about, well, we should quickly mention the broken glass scene. Tell us about recreating that.
Yes, as we all know, it was a bit of a dramatic moment during the grand final.
Yeah, quite the controversy.
Where people claimed that something not so good was done by one of the Italian singers. But I had more cameras during my grand final and actually captured what actually happened. And a glass broke, nothing else. And he tried to look on the floor and, you know, nothing else. I'm not going to repeat the accusations no. Because since I've worked with Eurovision, I know the amount of safety. It would be impossible for something like that to happen almost. I mean, they have dogs sniffing everywhere. No one sniffed anything. It was just a glass. So that happened. And I used my extra camera to show that.
It's great.
Just fantastic. I love the sense of humor behind it all. What sort of reaction do you get from people who view this and probably now make it a bit of a tradition to view this every year?
It's fun, like how it's the most watched Eurovision content online at the moment.
Wow.
Brag, sorry.
You've earned it.
Yeah, but it's so strange each and every year because this is, I'm a very boring person. I mean, I live a very boring life. And then this happens. The reactions are very positive.
What is it about the Eurovision Song Contest for you that made you love it so much that you wanted to kind of celebrate it in this way?
I like a big show, and there isn't a big show. It's a spectacle. You have different nations, different languages. So it's that aspect that is quite fun. It's just because if you have a talent show in like Sweden or Germany, it's always sort of the similar kind of music, kind of, even though it's in different languages and different, but it's not this cultural phenomenon. I've traveled a lot in Europe, so I'm quite fascinated with how different Europe is, you know, also the cultures. And of course, I mean, it has a huge audience. It's a treat to celebrate looking back at past years because the show is like, we know that it's like 4 million hours. And it's also a way of telling that you can tell the same story in a much shorter time because they really can. Not to be mean, but we don't need 4 hours.
No.
No, it's a really good point.
No, I think we all agree with that, to be fair.
It's the best show ever, so I don't hate it anyway, but the last hour could really be, I mean, especially in these times where television needs to be shorter and, you know, faster.
Well, that's why your Lego version is great, because it's always under, you know, half an hour or roughly around that. So it's brilliant that you managed to condense it all into that.
Yeah, and it's and you get sort of the same memories with you, but of course it's way faster.
We can't let you go before sort of asking you, any surprises do you think that you might want to be trying to include for next year to make it bigger and better than before?
It all depends on what the Italians bring, you know, the stage design. I have my idea. You can do everything for Eurovision, and I expect that from Italy. But I hope for a big smashing stage, what I will redo.
Alexandro Kruger, the creator of Lego Eurovision. And if you get a chance to have a look at it, by the way, do go and check it out on YouTube. It is remarkable, absolutely remarkable, and good fun as well.
Yeah, brilliant fun, a really nice guy, and looking forward to what he creates next year.
Will be absolutely amazing. Hope you've enjoyed our little look back at just some of the people that we've been speaking to over 2021, all to do with Eurovision. Going to do it again in the next podcast, which is a kind of look at the stuff that happened after the Eurovision Song Contest. So we did a very immediate reaction episode. We stayed up to quite late at night, didn't we? Recording this thing. And I just think listening to our emotions, it was quite an emotional chat that you and I had. I want to sort of memories of that. You'll hear from backstage, somebody who was backstage getting to meet all of the entries and see what was going on. You will hear from Ian Dale, who is a very well-known and respected political commentator and radio broadcaster in the UK, about his love for the Eurovision Song Contest. And then, of course, another chance to hear our conversation backstage at his gig with Dorothy Freer, who, of course, represented Iceland in both 2020 and 2021. Really looking forward to that. So some more best bits to come on the next episode, Cress, of what?
No pas.